terrible cataclysms or by ingenious inventions. Real history is made when the sensitive crown of the human heart inclines itself ever so slightly. And it doesn't take much. You know, because we have met here today, that could happen to one of you. The sensitive crown of your heart could incline itself ever so slightly. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. All those who believed were of one heart and soul, and not one of them said that any of the things that belonged to him were his own. But they had everything in common. There was not a needy person among them. And then that wonderful phrase, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. At 9:15 this morning, we found out we couldn't get out of our garage at our apartment complex. I feel like I've been... Daniel came and got us, and we made it. I just want you to know that I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Don, for your introduction. Perry, I always enjoy your music and your team. But thank you for allowing me to do something that I've wanted to do for a little while, to be honest with you. I wanted to put a postscript, a P.S., on 20 years of preaching to you. And I wanted to use this simple little sermon to do it. I don't know a sermon that I enjoyed preparing any more than I did this message. I wept when I prepared it, and I have wept when I preach it. One of my favorite preachers is Fred Craddock, and he tells a story about his first ministry, which was a rural church in the mountains near Chattanooga, Tennessee. They'd saved up all their candidates for baptism and were having a special service on the banks of a river. The congregation was gathered around a fire and were singing, and as each one of them was immersed, they would go to this makeshift dressing room and would put on some dry clothes and join those around the fire. After all of them had been baptized, Fred Craddock went and put on some dry clothes and joined the others. And then a man named Glenn, it was always Glenn, began one by one introducing all the new people, telling their name, where they lived, where they worked, and something interesting about them. And then after they had done that, the congregation gathered in a circle around all those who had been baptized, all the new members. And one by one, members of the church would step forward and say, "Hi, my name is..." And it would be followed by, "If you ever need someone to help you with your washing and ironing, if you ever need someone to chop you some wood, if you ever need someone to watch your kids, if you ever need somebody to repair something at your house, if you ever need someone to come and sit with you when you're sick, if you ever need someone to give you a ride to town," things like that, until they had all introduced themselves and offered up some act of service. And then they had a square dance. And then Percy Miller it was always Percy Miller, would step forward and put his thumbs in his bib overalls and say, "Folks, it's time to go now." And they would all begin to leave. And Percy Miller would begin kicking dirt on the last remnant of the fire. And he looked over to his young preacher and said, "Craddock, folks don't get any closer than this." And Fred Craddock, looking back on that, said, "They have a name for that ritual in those mountains. They call it church." Well, there's no way to tell you how much I enjoyed that little story. It took me back to so many times and so many places, but it also saddened me as I thought about so many churches. And it really got me going. It doesn't take much. And that really got me going. And I did some reminiscing. And I remembered a night that I preached in southern Missouri. And my sermon was about us maybe dropping some of our pretend, taking off our masks, and allowing the real us to be known. That some very special things can happen when we have the courage to break open our alabaster vases and let the contents of our life spill out. When we stop treating vulnerability as some kind of enemy. In that sermon, I told a story about a woman who said to me one time at the door, she said, "You always ask me on Sunday morning how I'm doing, and I always say I'm doing fine. But," she said, "David, I don't even make it to the end of the walk until I break down and I cry all the way home." And I said, "Maybe there's someone like that here tonight. Maybe it's like that in your life, and you're really hurting, and nobody knows it. And maybe you would find the courage to come forward tonight and tell us." And after I'd finished speaking, I stood off to the side, and they sang a song, and a young farmer came walking to the front. When he and his minister met, the man said something to his preacher and then buried his head in his preacher's chest and started sobbing. And I thought, wow, this is really something. And when he was composed some, his preacher said he wanted to speak to the people. And this is what he said: "People, if something doesn't change in my life, I'm finished. It's gotten too heavy. I can't stand it anymore. I'm not going to make it if something doesn't happen." And I'm watching this, and I'm wondering what will happen. What will happen when we say amen? I have talked this young farmer into coming forward and burying his very soul. What will happen when we say amen? Well, what happened I will never forget. As soon as the preacher prayed and said amen, there was a stampede. Mostly men. They came running down the aisle. And they grabbed that young farmer and they hugged him and they slapped him on the back and they said, "No, you're not finished. I won't let it be. I'll be with you whatever it takes. You're not finished. You're gonna make it." They encouraged him and they loved him and they lifted him and they valued him and they gave him a marvelous new vision of a glorious future. What happened? He left church. His feet weren't hardly touching the ground. What happened? Well, there's a word for it, I believe. is called church. I first met Dick Dose when we were meeting in a double classroom at Bellevue College in the beginning days of Calvary Christian Church. He was in a wheelchair. He was paraplegic, very spastic, and could not speak one word. Not one. But he would come to love the Lord, and he would come to love our people, and our people would really come to love Dick. There were three things among many that he did that really moved me. We were having a Christmas party, and we were having it at the old Wildwood Church building down on 84th. It's a Seventh-day Adventist church now. And people were doing things like singing. A couple of people would sing. Little children that were maybe taking music lessons would try to play something on the piano or the horn or whatever. And there was some good stuff too. Dick communicated with us by making guttural noises, and we had to guess what he was wanting. He always started with the bathroom. You need to go to the bathroom. Well, who he was sitting with that night asked everything they could imagine, and they never hit it. And finally, they asked Dick, "You mean you want to sing?" And when you hit upon what he wanted, he could barely move his head in the affirmative. I'm back enjoying this night, and I notice that Faye gets up and goes to the piano, and Sheila starts pushing Dick's wheelchair up to the front. And Faye begins to play Silent Night. And Sheila had one of the most vibrant, rich, alto voices. And she with her voice, and Dick with his, sang Silent Night. Wow. Another occasion, this man, I was going to close the service, about time to have the benediction. I saw him back there, and it just an urge came over me. And I said, "Dick, could I ask you to have the benediction?" And he started to pray, and it was it was like a little child begging something from its daddy. But really, he outdid himself one Easter. He had to ride to church on Sunday night with some people that were in the choir. And so he was there for every rehearsal of the Christmas cantata. Easter cantata, I'm sorry. And we presented it on Palm Sunday night. Building was full at Calvary. Building was full, and the choir director gets his music stand all set up. And then he goes and gets another music stand, brings it up beside his, and lowers it. And then he goes and gets Dick. And he brings him up beside his music stand, the first notes of the cantata come out over the PA system, and somehow those arms came up, and he co-directed with our choir director the entire Easter cantata. You know, I was so glad I preached at a church where you didn't have to go get permission to do it. You didn't have to have a couple, three elders meetings to ask if that's okay. He didn't even tell me about it. And there's a name for that when the Spirit of God is allowed to lead and something so special and so spontaneous breaks out. Forget convention, forget proprieties, forget cool, forget smooth. And people are serendipitously overwhelmed with an avalanche of unexpected joy. There is a beautiful word for that. It's called church. Church. I have the pleasure to do something here now that I don't do when I preach this sermon other places. And that's to call attention to Roger and Charlie Curry. You may or may not know this, but Roger, probably the busiest dentist in this city, and throughout all those years got up early to prepare a Sunday school lesson. But for over 30 years, Roger and his family picked up Dick and brought him to church. And it only bothered him when he couldn't do it. It never bothered him when he could. Well, Through the Valley of the Kwai is a remarkable story of British prisoners of war held captive by the Japanese in the valley of the River Kwai. And Ernest Gordon writes about this. He says, "We live by the rule of the jungle, the evolutionary law of the survival of the fittest. I look out for myself and to hell with everybody else." He said they were like a pack of animals. The weak were trampled underfoot, the sick ignored, the dead forgotten. When a man lay dying, we had no word of mercy. When he cried for help, we averted our heads. But things changed one day when he was seriously ill, and wonder of wonders, two men he didn't even know nursed him back to health. And somehow, some way, life in that prisoner of war camp began to change because God came in, they found a Bible. And here's an example of change. They counted the shovels one day, one was missing. The commandant said, unless who took the shovel confessed, he was going to kill everyone in that unit. A man stepped forward and said, I did it. And they beat him to death with a shovel. Later, it turned out no shovels were missing. An innocent man had taken the blame and died for the rest. What happened? They began to love God. They began to love others. Men began to smile, even to laugh and sing. We were learning what it means to be alive. We realized that we were put in this world not to be served, but to serve. They began to make good things like artificial legs for amputees. They grew a garden of herbs for healing, instruments for doctors, alcohol for antiseptic purposes. There was art, and they put on plays and dances and classes on literature and language and philosophy and ethics. Dying men found a purpose for living the short time they had left in happiness and helping others. When they got back to England, the few that survived the Valley of the Kwai, they were so saddened because they couldn't find anything even close in any church what they had found in the valley of the Kwai. You see, in the midst of a literal hell on earth, they became the church. Jesus had said, upon this Gibraltar-type rock of truth, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And these amazing men would say, amen and amen, and they proved Jesus right about his church in the valley of the Kwai. A couple came to a small group Bible study. They were a little late, and it became obvious that the man was drunk. When they began to pray, he joined right in. It was a drunken prayer that went on for 10 minutes. God, won't you please protect us from the Klingons? God, the Klingons are coming. Please protect us from the Klingons. And then he went from the Klingons to praying about Jolly Ranchers. God, send down some Jolly Ranchers. Can you imagine how long a 10-minute prayer like that would seem? Well, as you can imagine, the minister's wondering, what on earth am I going to do when we quit praying? But he needn't have worried, because a woman full of wisdom and full of love walked up to the man and offered, would you like a cookie? And she engaged him in conversation and took him off to the side, and about 6 or 7 or 8 people rushed over to the wife then and began to ask, how can we help you? I absolutely despise drunks. I hate drunken behavior. I can still remember my mother with her eyes swollen and black and blue from my drunken stepfather. I know what it's like to get up in the middle of the night to be awakened out of a sound sleep by a frantic mother telling me, David, run. I would have probably thrown him out. Shame on me. That drunken man is now referred to by his preacher as one of the strongest leaders he has ever had in his ministry. Think about that woman who went up to him. What made her willing to walk across the room? How did she do that? What made her think of that? Because she was following the one who said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. Because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. She learned to walk up to an obnoxious drunk and offer him a cookie and engage him in gentle conversation from Jesus. When something like that happens in a small group or a Bible study, what would you call that? I would call it church. My mother passed away in July. She was 96 years old. And really, she lived alone. Those last couple years after my stepfather died, and that was not the stepfather, that was a drunkard. Let me just share with you how it was while she was still alive. Amazing as it may sound, she burned for much of her heat wood. People looked in on my mother, my brother, and his daughters, but there was a couple. Get the slide of the hospital room, if you would, please. There was a couple during those last years of her life who would haul her wood, stack it neatly in her carport, bring it in and fill up the big old box by the old Ashley wood burner. And after they had finished their chores, they would come and kneel. This is the hospital, but kind of picture it at her home. I wish the picture would show better the expression on their face. It's Ralph and Teresa. After they had finished their chores, they would come in and they would kneel down in front of my mother and tell her how much they loved her, how much she meant to them, and the many ways she had encouraged them and blessed them. And after they had done that for quite a while, they would pray and pray and pray. Ralph and Teresa are Pentecostal. My mother's Pentecostal. And I'm telling you, they would pray. And Mom would tell me about that just about every visit they made. And when I thought about that, three people inside a very humble, double-wide mobile home, nestled in the midst of these big, beautiful pine trees, talking, touching, praying. Those last months, my mother couldn't get out much at all. And she had a name for what they did when her friends came to call. She called it church. And now, if you'll allow me, with your permission, I'm going to close the message the way I did when I first preached this sermon at chapel at the college. Young people, since I teach preaching, I'm always alert lest I violate a preaching principle. Was my subject as clear as a cloudless moon? Was my message connected to my text? I hope it was in this message, because I wanted to show you in these simple little ways what it can look like in real life when we become what we find in Acts 2 and Acts 4, when we allow His Spirit to fill us, when we follow Jesus instead of just admiring Him. A lot of people admire Jesus. He fed 5,000 and they admired Him. He fed 4,000 and they admired Him. They even wanted to make Him king. They liked the thought of having free bread. But only 120 followed Him. Who could help but admire Jesus, but not so many follow Him? And if I fail to demonstrate what happens when we do, I'm so sorry. And Jesus, I know I didn't talk about you nearly as much as I talked about your bride, but you were the reason for all those stories. Really, they were all about you. There wouldn't have been any stories without you. If this were to be the last time I ever spoke to you, advised you, taught you, prayed for you, urged you, or humbly sought to affect the inclination of the sensitive crown of your heart, I would say to you, love people. Don't ever prejudge any people. Don't prejudge a spastic, mute, paraplegic, or you could miss one of the most fascinating people God ever made. That down and out Missouri farmer who's on the verge of cashing in his chips could be just about ready to be born again. And a drunk that shows up at a small group and prays about Klingons. And Jolly Ranchers may be just a little love and kindness away from becoming a great leader in the church. And know this, that C.S. Lewis was right when he said, there are no mere mortals. You will never meet a mortal. You will only meet immortals. And God has placed eternity in their hearts, and they may just await this day your coming into their life. And then I said to our kids, there are three things that I hope and pray you do better than I did. And that's build the church. That's lead the church. But mostly, go and be the church. You can bring your praise team up. Don Rowe, come and stand at the first or at the front of the church. God bless you. If you need to make any kind of decision for Jesus, come and tell Don about it. And if you need prayer, there'll be two godly people back on that table that'll pray for you. Thank you.